Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm Ayan Bior in Washington. Here are some of the stories we're covering today, Thursday, July 6th, 2017. Officials in Jonglei State say five people are dead and a dozen children abducted in Bor County following two separate cattle raids.
Yesterday in Jele, in Tuam area in Toch, there were three people killed and six children were abducted. So in these three people, one is a man and two are women.
And MSF says there are a number of contributing factors to the rise of acute malnutrition in Pibor.
There is an increase of price of the food and availability in the market due to a roadblock, and there is insufficient or inadequate running program, nutritional running program in the field.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. Five people are dead and at least a dozen children abducted in two separate attacks in Jonglei State. Officials there say the incident occurred after suspected cattle raiders from Boma State raided Bor County yesterday. This despite a recent peace agreement signed between the Bor and Pibor communities of Jonglei and Boma States. For VOA News, Deng Gai Deng reports from Bor.
Akej Dengdit, the Jonglei State Information Minister, says the villagers were killed in two separate attacks.
Yesterday in Jele, in Tuam area in Toch, there were three people killed and six children were abducted. So in these three people, one is a man and two are women. It was unfortunate and it happened yesterday. In Twitch source yesterday, there were some young men going to the cattle camp. On the way, they fall into the ambush and two of them lost their life.
With yesterday attack, Dengdi says the casualty figure from cattle raiders in Jonglei State is 25, and there have been at least 23 separate incidents there since the two communities signed a peace agreement 2 months ago. He says since May 21st, children have been abducted in various parts of the state. State government officials are accusing their counterparts in Boma of violating a cessation of hostilities agreement the two sides signed in May. Dengdit says this is primarily because Boma State officials have failed to stop the cattle rustlers and child abductors.
We have to believe in what we do and what we say and what we sign, okay? We still hold them accountable for their criminal and for the youth keeping on. Do all this international crime. Taking someone's child is international crime.
Dengdit calls the governments of Boma State to control its youth as soon as possible, or Jonglei will allow its own youth to do as they like.
They should soon work on how to stop the youth and control them. And we are telling our youth, you don't need to respond at the same way the Murile are doing it. The government of Boma State should do the same thing. So the ball is on their net, and we are waiting as soon as possible to hear from them.
Deng also calls on officials in Juba to intervene as soon as possible.
We want to tell the national government, we want also our partners for the peace, especially UNMISS, are listening and they are serious and they want soon as possible to come in. We don't want our youth here in the States or anybody to take violence as a solution.
Nyang Korok, a youth leader in Boma State, denies allegations that Murile youth attacked villagers in Bor County of Jonglei State. Speaking by telephone in Arabic from Pibor, Korok says youth in Boma State are observing the cessation of hostilities agreement signed 2 months ago.
Well, we are observing the occasion of hospitality that we signed in Juba. If there is any attack, maybe they are criminals. They may go one person, two people, and go and cause problems. There, but that is not what is organized, that all youth are going to attack. We are observing what was signed by the national government, what was said by the first vice president of the republic, that we stopped and wait until people go for a peace conference and see what the government will do.
For VOA News, I am Dengai Deng Inbor.
A dozen government soldiers are on trial in a South Sudanese military court. They are accused of raping aid workers and killing a local journalist at the Terrain Hotel in Juba last July. The court has now ordered the prosecution to produce the rape victims in the next court session, scheduled next Tuesday. Presiding Judge Knight Bruni did not say what would happen if the victims failed to appear, but says their presence is a legal requirement for the five-judge panel to make a ruling on the case. Waki Simon Mudu reports for VOA from Juba.
Today's court session was the fifth. Even though four prosecution witnesses have so far testified, the five rape victims are yet to appear. Presiding Judge Knight Bruni says the presence of the victims is a legal requirement for the judgment of the case. Following a request from the defense during today's session, Co-Judge Colonel Deng Mayel ordered the prosecution to physically present the rape victims in court next week.
One, medical examination of victims, those who made in Nairobi, we want them. Two, we need the names of those who were raped. Because this international court, we want to clean our image of the Sudan People Liberation Army. Because we are taken wrongly and there are negative allegations against government.
All the rape victims are outside South Sudan. Mayel says his team wants to meet the head of the South Sudan Army as well as President Salva Kiir to discuss the possibility of bringing victims safely into the country. South Sudan in Focus asked Colonel Santo Domich, the acting SPLA spokesman, what would happen if the victims fail to show up.
Then why should they open a case? This is another question. As long as the victims have opened the case, then the victims are expected to appear before the court. But otherwise, I don't understand why the case has been opened.
During today's session, two more prosecution witnesses testified. One of the witnesses, identified as Jimmy, gave a detailed account of how the government soldiers stormed the hotel and threatened the staff as they looted assets. Jimmy identified two of the 12 suspects who are being tried for the various crimes including rape, murder, looting, destruction of property, and harassment. Jimmy told the court that one of the suspects he identified first entered the guest room where they were hiding and walked away with a TV screen. Jimmy says at one moment, five empty soldiers also entered and started asking whether there were rebels in the room. The men, he says, walked away with the mattresses and other assets belonging to the hotel, including their personal monies. After several hours of being held inside their room, they were then ordered to walk out of the hotel. Another witness, Henry, said he had to leave his room to a container house for safety. While hiding with two other colleagues, Henry identified two of the suspects in court today. He says he saw soldiers breaking padlocks of various hotel rooms and loading stolen mattresses and other assets into vehicles. Both witnesses told the court soldiers who were deployed outside the gate of the hotel 3 days before the incident were the ones who turned against the hotel and carried out the looting. Domich says court will have to determine the specific crimes each suspect committed.
This is what needs to be clarified by the court, because it is going to appear during the process of proceeding. During the process, of course, the witnesses will have to identify and try to verify who among who has actually committed crime of rape, crime of killing, or of looting.
The next court session is scheduled to take place next Tuesday. For VOA News, I'm Waki Simon Wudu in Juba.
International criminal court judges have ruled that South Africa failed in its obligations to the War Crimes Court by neglecting to arrest Sudan's wanted president when he visited the nation for a summit of African leaders in 2015. The ruling comes as South African officials dig in their heels in their decision to withdraw from the court after the controversial incident. VOA's Anita Powell reports from Johannesburg. 2 years after Omar al-Bashir's whirlwind visit to South Africa, judges at the International Criminal Court unanimously ruled the nation's officials erred by failing to arrest Sudan's president on an international war crimes warrant. The court issued a warrant in 2009 for the Sudanese leader on charges of genocide, war crimes, and crimes against humanity for his involvement in the long-running conflict in Darfur, where the United Nations estimates 300,000 people have been killed and more than 2 million have been displaced. On Thursday, Judge Kuna Tarfusser said the three judges had unanimously agreed on the ruling.
By not arresting Omar al-Bashir while he was on its territory between 13 and 15 June 2015, South Africa failed to comply with the court's request for the arrest and surrender of Omar al-Bashir, contrary to the provisions of the statute, thereby preventing the court from exercising its functions and powers under the statute in connection with the criminal proceedings instituted against Omar al-Bashir.
But the panel said they would not refer the matter to a higher authority at the United Nations. Southern Africa Litigation Center Executive Director Kajal Ramjithan Keo told VOA her legal advocacy group welcomes the ruling, including the decision not to refer the case to the Assembly of States Parties, or members of the court.
A referral to the ASP or the United Nations Security Council would practically have not been of much effect in any case. If we look at the referrals of other similar countries in similar situations, Uganda, Djibouti, Kenya, the DRC, they were all referred either to the ASP and the United Nations Security Council or to both bodies who have taken no action on them. So I imagine South Africa would have been in precisely the same boat. They would have been referred, they would have been very upset about it, and there would have been no follow-through from either of those bodies.
South Africa announced its intent to leave the court in 2015 after the public disagreement with the court over the Bashir incident. The ruling African National Congress Party said last week that it remains committed to leaving the court. Other African nations and the African Union have frequently accused the court of targeting Africans. The court disputes this charge and notes it is investigating situations in a number of countries, but has yet to try a case from a non-African nation. Anita Powell, VOA News, Johannesburg.
South Sudanese judges are appealing to President Salva Kiir to immediately resolve the issues affecting them. The judges went on strike more than 2 months ago to demand better wages, better working conditions, and the resignation of the head of the judiciary. As Nabil Biagio reports for VOA from Juba, the strike has crippled the judiciary.
The chairman of South Sudan's Judges and Justices Committee, Justice Khalid Muhammad Abdullah, says a committee Mr. Kiir formed in April to look into the judges' demand presented its report to the president 3 weeks ago. He says his group wants the president to act on the group's recommendations. The strike by the country's 274 judges has paralyzed South Sudan's overstretched judiciary system, leaving courts countrywide unable to hear cases. Abdullah says he and his colleagues have fully cooperated with the presidential committee tasked with investigating the judges' complaints.
The committee has done its work because the committee met a lot of stakeholders within the judiciary, met a lot of people in the judiciary, and we think that they have enough information about the cause of the problems in the judiciary.
Abdullah says the judges of South Sudan work under poor conditions where judges in their courts lack stationery, courtrooms, transportation, and even identity cards for judges. Abdullah says the executive branch of government sets aside enough money for the judiciary, but it is the administration of the judiciary that mismanages its resources.
Within the judiciary, we have a lot of resources, and these resources is enough to cater for the need of the judiciary, I mean to make the judiciary operational and effective. But this is on condition that these resources to be, you know, well administered and well utilized. And this is only can be done through an administration or leadership which is aware and know how to administer these resources.
Abdullah says working conditions could improve if Chief Justice Chanrik Madut the head of the judiciary is removed.
The main problem is the leadership in the judiciary. And we ask that the leadership of the judiciary to resign or to be removed by the president. This is very clear.
Abdullah says the judges don't know what the committee included in the report it submitted to Mr. Kiir. South Sudan's Justice Minister, Paulino Wanawila Unango, refused a request to comment on the matter. Abdullah says, regardless of its contents, it has been 3 weeks since the report was submitted to the president, and it's been more than 2 months since the start of the strike, which he says is too long for a country to go without a functioning judiciary.
We hope that as soon as possible that the president is going to take a decision on the light of the reports of the presidential committee which he was formed.
The Juba-based Community Empowerment for Progress organization, or CEPO, submitted a petition today to South Sudan's Human Rights Commission. In it, they expressed concern about the human rights situation and a state of law and order in South Sudan in the absence of a working legal system. Executive Director Edmund Yakani says he fears the lack of a functioning judiciary might encourage crime in South Sudan.
We know for the situation we're in, how crimes are happening and how sometimes lack of legal literacy, how our people take the law into their hand.
Yakani urges President Kiir to make the issue a top priority.
So we're calling upon His Excellency, our President, to really take up this issue as a very big issue, because we're worried that the judges' strike is really, it's really infringing into our rights. At the same time also, it's really investing on element of delaying of justice. And delaying of justice really means denial of justice.
For VOA News, I'm Nabil Biagio in Juba.
You're tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, the number of malnourished children is growing by the dozens in Pabor. Find out what is being done to help when we come back.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
what can be done to improve crop production in your region?
Okay, to improve crop production, we need funding. And then the farmers, they need to be sensitized and trained for better ways of planting crops or trees for fruits.
Introducing irrigation systems. As we know, we're living in the dry season and the rains are not frequently falling. So the irrigation systems can help farmers to grow the recommended crops they need.
To improve crop production in my region, the farmers should be practicing crop rotation. For example, this season, they should either cultivate maize and the next season, soya. Like, the soya provides nutrients to the soil.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus. The French medical charity MSF, or Doctors Without Borders, says the number of children suffering from acute malnutrition in the area surrounding Pabor and Boma State has more than doubled since last year. And according to the charity, the numbers are likely to rise. Tito Justin has more from Juba.
In May, MSF admitted 146 children to its two clinics outside Pabor for acute malnutrition, compared to 69 patients at the same time last year. It adds the number is likely to rise in the months ahead. Children suffer most during the hunger gap, which often starts in April. It's the time between harvest when food often runs scarce, leading to growing concerns of an increase in childhood malnutrition. Alain Ngoko, MSF's deputy medical coordinator in Juba, says there are a number of contributing factors to rising malnutrition in Pabor.
There is an increase of price of the food and availability in the market due to roadblock, and there is insufficient or inadequate running program, nutritional running program in the field.
MSF says distributing food to the community in and around Pabor would make a huge difference in tackling acute malnutrition and avoiding unnecessary deaths.
I think for the previous year, I mean 2016-2015, there were some general food distribution who can help to prevent severe malnutrition. It was not done this year. And also there were a supplementary feeding program for the more vulnerable population was running the previous year. This year they are there, but they are not running adequately. This could prevent to have severe malnutrition case and to have some death from severe malnutrition case.
He is calling for other organizations working in and around Pibor to distribute food to residents to prevent malnutrition. Plan International is among aid agencies supporting the malnourished children in Pibor. Last week, the organization's director for international program, Jonathan Mitchell, said distributing food aid to villagers is not a sustainable way of ending food shortages and hunger. He added that the best way to ensure food security is to empower farmers and produce their own food.
It is not sustainable. So the longer-term solution is to ensure that people can go back to their homes, that they can grow crops again, and that assistance is given to people to be able to grow crops, to be able to have productive livelihoods.
Ngoko is also encouraging other aid agencies to provide more health services, including supplementary feeding programs. They would target vulnerable groups such as pregnant and breastfeeding women and children under 5, including those living outside of Pibor.
What we are asking is, we are asking to all the partners to increase the support in Pibor, to increase the support in the nutritional side in Pibor, and also in around Pibor and outside Pibor. If they increase the nutritional support, if they increase the feeding program, if they do the global food distribution, I think this could prevent further the malnutrition severe case.
In April, authorities in Boma State's Pibor County noted that insecurity in the area is hampering delivery of humanitarian aid services to hundreds of thousands of people in urgent need of assistance. For VOA News, I am Tito Justin in Juba.
South Sudanese in the diaspora campaigned 6 years ago for the independence of South Sudan. Some community leaders who worked very hard to convince South Sudanese to vote for independence are expressing disappointment at the state of affairs at home. John Tanza spoke with Jankur Kwat Mayol, who heads the civil society Concerned Citizens of South Sudan. Mayol says he is still proud of his country.
I will never regret, you know, separating from the North because we went through difficulties along all these years. So the only concern that I have right now, the independent this year and as the last 3-4 years came in a very sad moment because our people are suffering from the brutal war, human rights violation, hunger, and so forth.
What would you tell people who have a different view from yours? For instance, you're saying you did not regret voting for independence. There are people during this economic crisis and during this fighting and during this instability who are saying they wish they knew that this is the South Sudan they were voting for.
Of course, that's South Sudanese, we have a dream because we were fighting for justice, liberty, and prosperity for 22 years. But unfortunately, that's not the case right now because we have a bad leader, a leader that's not listening, a leader that forgot the values that South Sudanese were fighting for. And I will tell them the time is ticking. And this leadership, when they are out of the way, the dream of South Sudanese would be restored.
What is it that you, in your own capacity, have done for the people of South Sudan that you are proud of?
Well, I'm proud that, you know, we voted for the independence. And as the bad government, Kiir government, keep continuing, I already, you know, sponsored the petition here so we can get help from international community and particularly U.S. government to have more pressure so people of South Sudan can be back on the right track again. And I'm a proud citizen that I will keep, you know, a nonviolent fight for the freedom and stability and peace in my country.
And how many people have signed your petition?
So far we have over 100 people signed up for that petition. And we're still moving forward, you know, because a lot of people haven't heard about it, but it's already there online. And I'm really inviting people to go ahead and sign for this petition, because this is the time that people should push a lot of effort, because we need government to understand that the only way to tackle the problem is to sit around table with all the political opposition, including the rebel, so we can bring peace in our country.
If I ask you about the national anthem of South Sudan, what does it mean to you?
National anthem mean a lot to me, because even when you sing the national anthem, I told you a little earlier that justice, liberty, and prosperity, these are three keywords in the national anthem, because we were fighting for justice, and justice has not been served for the people of South Sudan. We were fighting for prosperity so we can have infrastructure, so we can have roads and basic human life, you know. We don't have it, you know.
Most of the people that I've been talking to this week, I asked them to sing the national anthem of South Sudan. Can you sing 2-3 lines for us?
Of course, I can sing it all. As a patriot South Sudanese, I did memorize the national anthem 6 months prior to an independence. I can do this.
Can you sing it for us?
Oh God, we praise and glorify you for your grace on South Sudan, land of great abundance, of all as united in peace and harmony. Oh, motherland, we rise, raise the flag with the guiding star. I sing a song of freedom with joy, for justice, liberty, and prosperity shall forevermore reign. Oh, great patriot, let us stand up in silent unrespect, saluting our martyrs whose blood cemented our national foundation. We vow to protect our nation. Oh, God bless our Sudan.
That's Jankur Kwat Mayol ending this interview by singing South Sudan's national anthem. He spoke with John Tanza from Salt Lake City, Utah, yesterday. Tomorrow we'll hear more from the diaspora about what South Sudan's independence means to them. And that's our show for this Thursday. We leave you with the song Mawazo by Diamond. We've been listening to Diamond with the song Mawazo. I'm Ayan Bior in Washington. Thanks for listening, and join us again tomorrow evening for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Chapurutani, kama penzi yangu wakati mwa.